Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sports Talk with DT. I'm here live tonight on IFM Radio Nation, and we're going to be discussing athletes that could have made it but didn't make it. Why not? I'm here with my two good, very, very fine brothers, Mr. Ray Weathers and Mr. David Wilson. How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Hey, what's going on, DT? How you doing this evening?
Good. So all of us know we could just name any guys off the top of our head, Len Byers, for one. You know, even if we want to go local to our individual communities, where guys that have legitimately had the potential and the skill to make it professionally, be it whether professional basketball players, professional football players, but for whatever reason, they didn't make it to domain or that platform. And I'm going to go to Ray first on this one. Ray, what do you think is the number one? I know this conversation can go many ways, but if you can just narrow it down to one reason in your opinion, what would you think the number one reason is why athletes that could have made it but didn't make it, why not?
Well, to be honest with you, DT, that would be hard just to pinpoint one thing, because I believe every athlete in every sport is different, different dynamic. But I would have to say, because I'm a person of faith, if it wasn't God's will for that purpose, a person to go to the level that they want to go to, then that's what I believe, because I've seen that from my own experience and other people's experience, to be honest with you. I've seen some good people, DT, that worked their tail off, had the platform and the stage to do it, and it still did not go the way that they wanted to go to. And the last thing I would like to state to that is that just because you're not playing in the NFL, Major League Baseball, or the NBA does not mean that you have not made it to the professional rankings. Once you get paid to play, that means you're a professional. I don't care what level it is. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Okay, yeah, and I definitely understand that, Ray, but let's take a deeper dive into it, you know, because sometimes, you know, even if we look into our urban kids versus suburban kids, you know, that has, let's say, different promotional opportunities, or, you know, different coaching opportunities, you know, do you believe that could potentially play a part into it as well? You know, kids that were talented and they just was not put in the right system.
Yeah, so I'm gonna pass the assist like Magic Johnson from my hometown to my wife Anza, so she can ask and put her perspective on that.
Hi, awesome. How are you? Thanks for having us.
How are you?
I'm all right. So having been a former pro and Euro athlete and going into the realm of youth sports for over a decade, having worked with some people like Mark Cuban, I can tell you that social media has given an advantage in many aspects to youth that participate in sports now, because you can provide highlights and you can provide clips that showcase, you know, all of the talents and whatnot, and where you might not be able to, from a financial standpoint, get to certain regions for recruitment. And then there's disadvantages that lead to entitlement with that as well.
Okay, so Angela, do you feel as if that people that have, let's say, a more of a social media crowd or more of a social media base than others have an advantage as to where they can go in their career?
Absolutely. I do think that just kind of gives more eyes as far as traffic. And then, you know, depending on the knowledge of the parents and the student athlete, how well they put their information out there, whether it's by themselves or recruiting service, there's definitely an unfair advantage there.
Okay, so from a female perspective, in your opinion, what do you feel is one of the reasons that athletes don't make it that could have made it?
Well, there's quite a few factors. One of the things that we look at in our leadership institute that is academic as well as sports-wise is character. You know, character, the intangibles of the game are what college coaches all the way up to professional ranks is what they look at. And so that is one of the things that you can that can either help or hinder. And character goes into, you know, how a student-athlete expresses themselves and from social media to socially, and then there is the intangibles of body language and attitude. So if a scout is coming to watch you play and you have poor body language, you know, smacking the ball out of bounds, taunting and probably not paying attention in the huddle, all of those things are things that college coaches look for that can make or break you. And then, of course, your grades. Your grades are that those are non-negotiables. So, you know, the NCAA on down to the NJCA, NAIA, they all have a board that governs whether or not you get in or not. And, you know, even though they've got some lowered stipulations right now with GPAs as far as the tests, the standardized tests of the ACT and PSAT going in and out the door, then there's that good old-fashioned, you know, again, just the way that you that you carry yourself, and that's just the bottom line. Whether you're, a lot of people say, good person, I believe that you also have to have a moral compass. If you don't know what your true north is, you don't you probably won't last long in any environment.
Absolutely. So you bring up a good point when you talked about character, and I want to bring on Coach David Wilson. You know, Coach David Wilson is a local coach here in Oakland County. In the city of Pontiac, Michigan, has coached at several different levels, and I want to bring his opinion on to piggyback on what you talked on when you mentioned character. Coach Wilson, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing this evening?
Awesome. So I'm sure you heard Ms. Angela Weathers' comments as she when she talked about, you know, that players that they have must possess a certain level of character, you know, and with your coaching knowledge and your coaching career, how important is it to have solid character in building the basketball program?
It in this day and age is very, very important. When I was coming up, coaches would tend to deal with a little more attitude or whatever the case would be. But now, as the young lady said, with the social media and more eyes around, it is very much athletes are under a microscope. So anything that you do is always seen, whether a person is there or not. So it's very, very, very important to have high character athletes, people in your program, on your coaching staff, all kinds of things. Because everything that you do as a program, whether you, the coach, does it or one of your players does it, it's under a microscope. And it gets out in an instant.
Awesome. Hey, we're live tonight on Sports Talk with DT with Mr. Ray Weathers, Coach David Wilson, and Ms. Angela Weathers on athletes that could have made it but didn't make it. Why not? Hey, we got a contest going on tonight. We're going to give somebody a chance to win some free money. If you can name me three of my nicknames as it relates to sports, and I'm going to give y'all one for free, Sports Talk DT. So you can call in and use the free one and give me two more of my nicknames, and I'm going to cash out you some money tonight on behalf of Sports Talk DT. 515-605-9898. Hey, so I want to just throw a question out, and whoever wants to grab it can grab it. I want to talk about the educational system. Do we feel as if that sometimes athletes don't make it because they're not put in the right educational system? If that's the right way to put it. You know, because I understand that, for example, like a kid that goes to an Orchard Lake St. Mary's, you know, is they going to have the same opportunities as a kid that went to, say, Jackson High School? You know what I mean? Be it that Orchard Lake St. Mary's is a all-boys private institution and Jackson High School is a public high school. Talk to me.
I'll interject first. With that being said, you hit the nail on the head. It is all about the environment and what your coaches, what your principals, what your community is willing to do for athletes. there's connections that people have that some people don't have. So you could put a person out there. As that was stated earlier, if your coach or your community is willing to put a recruitment tape together for an athlete who says who may not have the means to put one together, all kinds of advantages depending on what level you go through, where you go through the suburban areas. Let's look at Michigan here in Southeast Michigan, Oakland County, for example. Our kids at St. Mary's, as you said, they get a very they get a different viewpoint as to going to Pontiac High. Pontiac High has a very bad reputation. Pontiac has a very good reputation as far as athletes, but the school itself has a very bad reputation. So there's going to be people that shy away from coming to look at an athlete or whatever the case may be, no matter that athlete may be better than the person down the road. But because of the reputation of the school, because of the surrounding areas and the disadvantages this player has at Pontiac High compared to the advantages that this player has at St. Mary's, that's going to be the difference, and that's going to be bad for the player at Pontiac High, who very well could make it and succeed in life dribbling a basketball and get a free scholarship, but because of the environment or the school that he goes to, he or she may not get a invitation or even look from a college coach or a school.
All right, Ray, what you got for me?
Well, Coach, I agree with you saying too, and I've been fortunate to be on both sides of the fence as a former player and obviously coaching some kids that, you know, are pursuing and now doing and going to playing at high levels to mid levels to, you know, the JUCO level. And I believe that based on the environment that you come from, when you mentioned my high school, you're talking about different pressures and different dynamics, right? If you're talking about an urban inner city, you know, you such as myself, but also dealing with things that most parents, most principals, athletic directors don't want to talk about us, some of the traumas that the kids deal with in their own household, right? And that means that it impacts your learning environment as well, right, where you don't have the confidence to come in and if you're not getting the proper teaching or the proper tools to equip the student athlete, you know, you could talk about disadvantages all day. So I believe just, you know, coming from my own city, speaking on my own experiences, I think some of those things can be a disadvantage to anybody based on your environment and the circumstances that you have. Regardless if that kid went to a top-level, top-notch school, the thing that people are not dealing with is social and emotional, and that's from every single level. So I believe that those dynamics are very important. Those are some of the things that, you know, what we were able to do with our national program out in Arizona DT, what we met kids where they at. We got to the root dealing with the social and emotional so we can get those kids to learn in a different type of style of way and see if that was able to translate over to their academic standards. And we were able to do that and went 11 for 11 for our players that all got full ride scholarships. And I want to piggyback so Angela now can piggyback off me and Coach Wilson on that and how to overcome some of those stimulations that we're seeing with the younger generation.
Absolutely.
So what the gentlemen are saying is accurate, you know, to the degree in which, you know, the way that the academics are handled, the quality of the teachers, whether they're highly qualified and certified and or certified, is important, the type of courses and the depth. And then, again, going back to what Coach was saying earlier about the professionalism of the coaches and the individuals around the organization, I think that can either deter or, you know, pretty much cause coaches to come and see about the program. And, again, you know, it's, you know, to just be real candid and transparent, there are programs that, you know, everything is budgetary, right? So there are people that still might come. You might not just get the same quality that you would if the circumstances were different, right? So there are lower level colleges, universities, and schools that they will settle for what they can get, right? Because that's the way that the system is set up.
Okay, so Angela, so let me ask you this then. Have you ever ran across someone? Have you ever ran across someone who was from your hometown, but they went away to become successful, or should I say, reach their professional plateau and then came back home? You know, is that sometimes needed, go ahead.
Yeah, well, absolutely. From myself to Demond Mallett, I come from a small town in Louisiana called Leesville, and the Cecil Collins, he played football, went on to the NFL. Demond was all-Euro, big-time player. I went and had the highest scholarship and then went to play in Europe, and it did. It took those summers for us to go away and to attend college camps and, all of the things that you had to do from showcase basketball, AAU. I was an AAU kid before showcase came around, and you had to do that in order to, to succeed, because we didn't have high media profiles. Like the nearest, if you were fortunate for us, the nearest television station was 1 hour and 30 minutes, 2 hours away. And so you have a newspaper, right? So, and I was almost in the 2000s, in the late 90s right there. So that's, it's possible, but it's a journey and it's difficult. And you definitely have to work very hard, and you have to have pretty much all of these facets that we're talking about working in your favor.
Okay, so in me and Ray's previous conversation, he spoke to the tune of it was one point in our conversation that he brought out about the importance of maintaining good business and solid relationships, because you never know when you're going to have to cross another bridge, another point in your life. Do you agree with that statement as it relates to athletes getting to where they need to be in life?
Oh, absolutely. So I was that athlete that I read all my books, I took it very seriously. And so I was double degreed in 5 years with 2 degrees, which rarely happens, which takes about 10 years. And became an entrepreneur at the tail end of my pro career, and before branding and all those things kind of came about, I started my first nonprofit. And as I went into that, I did charity work with other pro athletes and predominantly male from the NFL, CFL, NBA and Euro leagues, and just I was astounded at how many of my colleagues and my brothers were either not degreed, or they had, they didn't have a platform to begin to build on, even though their careers, whether they were first draft picks or whatever. I just had those type of intellectual conversations with them about how important it was to be able to set those things in place for yourself.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Hey, I have my friend, Mr. Big Lou, Pontiac activist. He's on the line, and he want to chime in on the subject. Big Lou, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's happening, DT? What's happening? What's happening? Everybody doing there?
What's going on? So what's your opinion on the conversation?
My opinion is this, man. I think we're touching on a lot of different things that's very, very pivotal in the success of these athletes, and student athletes, if we will, okay? I think that if we're looking at the topic at hand, you have to consider, everything. I think everybody's checking all the boxes. You're looking at coaching. You're looking at socioeconomic status, essentially, emotional status, coachability. These are all things that really can thwart or can springboard a person's career future. And then I guess something to coin as well would be, what is a person selling? You know what I mean? What's a person selling? I think coaches have to look at that in recruiting. I think that that's important in terms of being inclusive with the parents and the community as well.
Absolutely.
Coach Wilson, what's your opinion on the importance of maintaining good business relationships as it relates to athletes getting to where they need to be?
Well, can you repeat that? You were breaking up a little bit on my end. Can you repeat that question?
I said, what is your opinion as it relates to players maintaining good business relationships for them to get to where they need to be?
That's very important. In life, not just athletes, but people as a whole, it's very much that the relationships that we build, that we are true to those relationships. And I say true to those relationships because, be honest and be yourself in these relationships. you hear the saying all the time, burning bridges or whatever the case may be, but as you meet people, there's people brought into your life for a reason and for a season. Some people will propel you and connect you to a whole nother world that you would never have the opportunity to be involved based on some circumstances. So when you build relationships, use those relationships, but be a true partner in that relationship, because you never know when you meet what the next person you meet, what they can do for and with you. I don't always look at somebody that I meet, what they can do for me. I'm always looking at what can we do for each other, or what is this person trying to teach me so I can elevate myself, or I can help the next person elevate.
So let me ask you everyone a question. What was it, in everyone's opinion, I'm going to get everyone's answer on Lynn Bias. What was it that stopped Lynn Bias from reaching his full potential? Anybody can jump in first.
Well, I just say this from a player's perspective, man. You got to be very mindful of your surroundings and the people around you when you get to that stage. I can relate to that, and I don't boast in that, DT. I think you know my character. I don't like to talk about myself as a individual
Absolutely.
Player. But I think it's really important the people around you, you know, that try to pull from you in different directions to do different things. I think when you get to a level where you have accessibility, all things for you are not good for you, if you will. And, you can start dibbling and dabbling to some things where you can't maximize yourself as a overall person holistically, not just from a player perspective, because I think he was just as talented as anybody. Everybody knows the story of what he was able to do against Michael Jordan in their younger days. And, obviously, been the number one draft pick. But obviously, we talked about it earlier on your show. We talked about the character piece, right? And then the relationships, right? And then serving leadership. So, to me, if you got right people that understand character, servant leadership, those people are the people who are going to speak life into you and not expose you to things that can harm your character, that can overall impact the athlete that you are. And I've seen that, from my high school level to the collegiate level to the professional level on all levels, right, and in business. So I think that's something that hindered him where this took a wrong direction based on, obviously the character part. And obviously back then we didn't have YouTube, Snapchat, Google, YouTube, and all those things that you get a chance to see, Facebook. It was face-to-face interaction, which I believe is missing today in this generation, where you have real emotions, can look a person in the eye and see what type of motives they had pertaining to what type of character they had, right? So I think that's the all tell into what took place with Lynn Bias.
All right, Big Lou, talk to me. What's your opinion on Lynn Bias? What was it that ultimately was his downfall?
Well, I think that the apparent thing was drugs, right? He had addiction. He had an addiction. Since you say that, I'm taking a deeper dive. Give me a second here, right? Just to give you a little insight, man. A lot of North Carolina. Lynn Bias' mother came and spoke to me and some of my peers as a kid in North Carolina, man. And again, he had everything. He had the whole package. He was Michael Jordan's parallel, if you will. You know what I mean? But again, and not coming from a bad household, his mom was real solid. I can be honest with you. She's a motivational speaker. I can't remember her name. I think it was Lynette or... Man, this is a good question, man. I think it was Lynette or Lanice. Something like that. Anybody, Miss Bias. But either way, again, kind of go back to what we were saying in terms of, what crowds you run with, what decisions you make, right? Sometimes we get in our own way. Sometimes athletes get in their own way and make bad decisions that lead to other bad decisions. And, then obviously didn't think it was going to end up like that. But again, bad decisions can lead to more bad decisions. And then unfortunately to his demise.
Okay. Coach Wilson, talk to me.
I'm sorry, my connection. Downfall of Lynn Bias. Peer pressure, fame, young man, bad mixture. You get these young men who don't they you give a pile of money to a young man and say go live life. The gravitational pull of certain personalities, good or bad, in your ear. Obviously, he got into an addiction. If you don't have, that's why I applaud the organizations. Now they're giving their rookies, their incoming rookies, certain mentorship. When you give a young man or a young person, I'm not even going to put a young man into it. When you give a young person a boatload of money and say, go live life, be an adult or whatever the case may be, with no coaching, what do you expect to happen to that individual? Again, money attracts a lot of good and bad, but more majority bad when you're talking about athletes. So he got caught up into a whirlwind, and it just hit him. I mean, you know, some people spiral and they survive, and they get, you know, they're able to survive that first boatload of money or whatever the case may be. But in his case, like I said, you got fame. He got known. Wrong people start coming around, influencing him, influencing his decisions. Then we get this multimillion-dollar contract. And I mean, you know, I'm going to live life. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to enjoy things I've never thought I could enjoy before. Because why? Because I can now afford these things. And unfortunately, it caught up to him. There's a million stories of people that we actually have famous, but they were able to come up out of it. Like Jordan said in the Last Dance, he said he went to a room and his teammates were all in there, and in one corner was this and one corner was that. Again, Michael Jordan was 19 when he was on the Bulls.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Bunch of money. He just happened to have, I guess, the recall of getting out of that room. But let's say Michael didn't have that, and he participated in some drugs or things of that nature. When we be talking about Michael Jordan, like we're talking about Lynn Bias, the whole package, but what happened?
That's something to consider. So I want to go to Angela. And Go ahead, Ray.
I want to say something, too. So you got, you know, when you look at that, right, it's the mindset, too, man. Like, everybody got a different mindset. You know, some guys come into the leagues like myself. I mean, you had a business mindset to be great, right? It wasn't about the whistles and bells. So you got to look at priorities. You look at, Coach said earlier, man, you know, when you get access, again, to money, sometimes you're spending it before you even get it, right? But where are your priorities? Like, you can have upbringing, you have great two parents, and I've seen some guys that had great upbringing and parents, and they went down the wrong path because they chose to, right? And then I've seen guys that play with me, I'm not going to name no names, that had horrific upbringings, and they still was able to persevere through that because they had a different mindset. So I think that's important, too. Every situation, every player is dynamic, different until you get there. I believe you got so much media, if you watch The Last Dance, that you've seen behind the veil, right? And you've seen more things on how people operated, their attitude. A lot of people don't get a chance to see that unless you're coaching at that level. High school level is a different dynamic from the collegiate level, high-level collegiate, into to the professional rankings. Until you get behind the veil and get a chance to see what that is, I think some people shouldn't even speak on it because you really don't know the real story.
Well, I would.
Absolutely.
And we go back and forth about these type of things, and it is mindset, and it is a lot of the things that you gentlemen said. And it, you know, aside from mindset, I will say it is the moral compass that I mentioned earlier, right? And so you asked the question about relationships as we made segue into this gentleman, Lynn Bias, and so it's your community, right? We are shaped and molded by our community. Number one, it's familial. It starts with the family dynamics, right? And so, no, everybody's family dynamics is not good, but then you have people, like Ray said, that come out on the other end. The bottom line at the end of the day is that if you have a moral compass and you are in tune with what you want, what you're going to do to get it, you're going to attract the people in your community that are going to hold you accountable.
Absolutely.
Again, this all comes back to accountability. You know, we came in some years ago in Plano, down in Plano, Texas, before we migrated to Michigan, and we had some phenomenal talent, and you know, from DJ Hogg and Tyler Davis, and they had a kid from UCLA that went to from Plano West and went to go play football, and you know, these kids are on the front page for doing, you know, for stealing and felonies and things that they don't have any business doing. But we look at the kid, right, and we shame the decision. However, at the same time, where are the people who are supposed to be holding them accountable? That is what I look at. And so, yeah, that's a travesty, and it's a terrible thing, but the system has always been the system. Those things have already been in place. Those things, the cars, the money, the jewelry, the women, that stuff has already been in place. And so the question would be, what are we doing strategically to form that coalition in our communities with our athletes before, so they can be knowledgeable before they get to that point and blow everything they have and become a statistic?
Okay, so Angela, let me ask you this.
Hey, DT.
And I agree with your point 100% that there should be some type of things that we can do as a people to prepare our athletes for that next level, so that they don't succumb to bad environments and bad mindsets and bad practices and bad behavior, so on and so forth. Which brings me to my question: Is people mind just simply not ready to go to that next domain? You know, Is high school basketball, high school baseball, high school football, high school track, high school wrestling, whatever the stratum of sport that you're in, is that good enough for some people?
Well, I think that the sport has been monopolized. I mean, you know, you got sports. You have sports departments, and I'm speaking from the Southwest region because I just came from the Southwest region. You know, of course, the Midwest breeds some of the greatest talent, so I'm not taking away from that. But I just say, when you got multi-million-dollar facilities that are as big as bigger than junior colleges and just as big as some universities, I think what we're doing is we're disenfranchising student athletes. We're giving them nothing to look forward to. And so I think that the infrastructure has to be sound. You got to have people that are in leadership. You have to have the community service aspect to keep them humble. And they need to understand all of the dynamics that are in place when you're going to play at these levels.
Right, and I add to it too. I think it boils down to where it's motives, man. It's motives that
you
come.
Got that too.
It comes from, you know, what is the parents' motives when their kid is being said they're the next LeBron James or Kevin Durant? You know, I know Imani.
Not just the parents, the people around them.
Yeah,
the entourage. They want the money back.
Yeah, I know Imani Bates. You know, dad played against him in high school very well, and you know, asked him some questions when they played against Jackson High, based on, you know, what comes to when you become a blue chip. But back in my day, we were called an All American, right? It's the motives. What is the coach's motives? Why he's coaching? Is he coaching you to get a raise or a promotion to a different coach and a different level, right, to advance to a job? There's so much non-integrity with the game of athletics, and this is nothing new. You know, like I said, the microscope is this bigger, and this goes for the coaches too. Like, listen, I told you, DT, when I first came on your show, I got offered $15,000, $25,000, $50,000 from my sophomore year all the way up until I would have completed college from a major program when I was a sophomore in high school. But like I said, the magnifying glass was not as big as it is today. This is nothing new, even before my time. So I think it's based on, why are you playing the game? Why are you coaching the game? Why are you representing the game on any level? It has to be a level, like I said, of order and integrity in the game.
Okay, so Big Lou, talk to me. Is high school basketball, high school wrestling, high school football, is that good enough for some people because their mindset is not ready for the next level? Hello, Big Lou, you there? Let's go to Coach Wilson.
Yes, sir. It's just like they were saying, that it's all about integrity. What is your motive? What are you driving for? Being honest, from a coaching's perspective, you invest in your kids, especially being from high school. You invest in your kids, but bottom line for coaches in this day and age, how things are going, Coaches are coaching to win and keep a job. If you don't win, you will not be there long.
That's right.
But that being said, if a coach like myself, I'm still in contact with, I would say, 80% of the players I've ever coached throughout my years. I'm still in contact with them. I still give them advice. I still talk to them. I've met their children. It is about seeing that person elevate and grow. It's not about, I'm not coaching anymore right now, and that's because I don't want to. It's not because I can't. It's because I don't want to. The motivation of an athlete, the motivation of a coach, what is their motivation? Is it for themselves, or is it to actually grow another person? And right now, mm-hmm. in the coaching aspect, it's about keeping a job. You're going after that, like they said, the blue chip. You're going after that blue chip. You're going after that next LeBron. You see kids at AAU tournaments all around, and
right.
whereas it used to be fair with kids from all kinds, you see kids from all levels. You only see the kids that the good kids or whatever the case may be. You don't see the kids that actually mm-hmm. need the coaching. I don't see a lot of coaches where you should be coaching. When you're in AAU or when you're in elementary school or when you're in junior high, you should be coaching certain things to these kids. I don't see that.
Absolutely.
I don't see that anymore.
That's perfect that you say that, Coach Wilson. I want to bring my engineer. Onto the show, Mr. Roland Kennison. He's back. He's the guy behind the scenes. He actually has his own show. Make sure you tune into the R&R show every Friday night on IFN Radio Nation. And he actually was a football player from Mineola, Texas. And if anybody knows Mineola, Texas, that's a small
wow.
town in East
Texas.
I want to bring him on and get his opinion. We actually went to college together at Paul Quinn College in Dallas, Texas. You know, he battled some injuries. You know, so I want to give him a chance to give his opinion. Roland, go ahead, talk to him. Is the mindset of some people, of some athletes, just not good enough, or their mindset is not ready for collegiate ball or professional ball? Talk to him.
Okay, so hello everybody. So as
how you
far
doing?
As that goes, I mean, some of the mindsets of the players, of the athletes, it's really not themselves. Again, it's mm-hmm. it's part of the entourage, mm-hmm. it's part of the parents, it's part of the scouts, it's part of the coaches, and it's very, very, a very small part of that is them. So until, you know, we can actually put it back in their hands for them to make that decision, mm-hmm. none of this is actually
yeah.
going to change.
That's right.
So
Roland, so from your perspective, you were one of the top linemen coming out of East Texas back in your day, and there were many different people that projected that you could have made it to the NFL. In your opinion, why do you feel were some of the things that kind of held you back from making it to the next level?
Honestly, it was my situation was self. I have to take all the blame myself. No, nothing bad really happened to me from someone else. It was me doing it, which is how I actually ended up at Paul Quinn. Because again, I was either supposed to be at Baylor with RG3 or at Oklahoma State with Dez Bryant at the time. So, did a couple things my senior year, got in trouble, and what happened was, I mean, the colleges they didn't find out what happened or whatever like that, but my coach was mad at me. And he stopped giving my letters and everything mm-hmm. like that. And then I didn't get a chance to do the publishing clearinghouse like I was supposed to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you know, it kind of just started to spiral downhill there when I was actually still in high school, you know. So, again, my situation was self, you know. So, but again, that didn't mean that I couldn't have turned it around and did something else later, you know, or did my own thing, you know. I just, I don't know. Me growing up in the country, you know, in East Texas, predominantly white. So coaches white, you know, so things were a little bit different. So then once I kind of got to Paul Quinn, you know, things were a little bit different for me. It was almost like a culture shock for me. Even though I'm black, it was kind of culture shock to me, like, okay, well, wow, I'm in a city. I'm in a school, all black school, you know, people from all over. Haven't seen, you know, pretty much anything. Just a little country boy just hit the city, so I tried to make the best of it. Didn't really go the way that I thought it would. You know, out of the 3 years that I did play football there, you know, only one, you know, my very first game played as a freshman. And, you know, that kind of took a toll on things, you know, kind of started messing with the mental. Like, you know, because when you come from a winning program to start just losing every game, and then, you know, the workout ethic is the same, then you got coaches that have favorites. You know, it took a toll on me a little bit. So I did the school as long as I could, but my motivation was football at the time. It didn't work. So then I did stop going to school. In the midst of me going to the park and just like working out and doing my own thing, trying to get back to what I knew, I ran into a semi-pro football team that actually come to the park and practice. So I was actually out there teaching some kids how to kick, because I was actually recognized for a kicker and tight end versus my defensive lineman skills. So I was at the park teaching them how to kick. And you know, they said, oh, they needed a kicker. So, boom. I was like, cool. I'll be on the team. So that was like my leeway in just being a kicker on my pro team or whatever. And then as I'm at practice, they needed some stand-in guys to run some plays or whatever to get the offense ready. And they put me on the D-line. And once I started playing defensive tackle, then they like, oh, wait, hold on. So you play defense tackle? And I was like, yeah, I play defense too. And like, well, you didn't tell me nothing, you know. But at the same time, just like, okay, I'm just trying to be out here, you know. I ain't trying to step on nobody's toes. But they was like, okay, what else you play? So I'm the tight end, offensive line pretty much. I'm just athlete, be all around the field pretty much. I'm not a skilled guy. I'm not one of those prima donna guys, man. That's not me. I like to be down in the trenches and working, you know. So go ahead.
All right, so I want to go to Ray. I want to go to Ray on a point that you brought out, Roland. You talked about a culture shock, and you talked about adjusting. So I want to go to Ray and ask Ray this: do you feel as if that, you know, people can't make the transition? Not saying that Roland didn't make the transition, but do you feel as if that people can't make the transition when there is a culture shock, right? Or where there is a total change of what you do or how you approach the game? Do athletes have a hard time making that transition as to why they can't make it?
Yeah, like I said, again, based on Matt and mentioned, right? Like, prime example, I use the Tola kid of ours. If you live in Arizona your whole life and you used to, you know, 7-degree winters, you know, playing a West Coast style of basketball, and that's all you know and see, you might want to think about going to play at, you know, Michigan State or Eastern Michigan, whatever, right? Because, it's, you know, you're going to get 30 below, you know, winter. You're going to deal with different diversities, different cultures and stuff like that, a different atmosphere and all those things. And sometimes we don't look at those dynamics. You just go to the name of the school because it's tradition and history, right? but you hadn't looked at the system. You hadn't looked at the coach's background. Did you, we call it doing your homework, looking at the analytics, who you have there before you, but we don't look at weather, environment, diversity, all those things where the overall person that you're going to have that experience, and then is a match admission to how I am, how I play, and those things. And I think in this generation, I get a chance to see those things because now you can go to, you know, in the, as far as basketball, you can get drafted out of anywhere now. It's much, you know, that much wide open. But I think it can be a tremendous culture shock for some people that, you know, if you order like myself, you know, me going to from Michigan, I had to really think about what that was like for me if I wanted to go UCLA, right? They recruited me hard. You know, everybody in the, you know, North Carolina, and all I knew was Midwestern, right? We from Michigan, bad boys. You know, we were so much talent within the city. We like, why we got to go anywhere else when we got so many great, you know, universities right there in the Midwest, right? So it's just a different dynamic for myself, you know, as me being an older, you know, player playing the game, but it can be a culture shock for a lot of people, and it can wear you down mentally as well, where you talk about being homesick, not having your family around, and somebody that's local, you're seeing their family around, you know, their relationships and friendships. So that could be a toll on yourself for sure.
Okay, so Ray, so let me ask you this. Now, I'm sure you don't mind me talking about you. If you could do it all over again, would you still choose Michigan State?
Absolutely not. And that's no disrespect to MSU. It sort of worked out for me, and as I shared before, like, I just scratched the surface. I was in a different situation, DT, where I got recruited by the first Hall of Fame coach, Judd Heitkamp, and he already had a vision for me. And Tom Izzo, when he inherited the team my last 2 years, you know, he had his own vision, but filling big shoes, correct? So when I look at it, I was one of those athletes that, you know, most people don't even understand what Prop 48 was. If I passed my test, which I missed by 0.2, to get a 17 at that time, you know, again, an All-American player, if I pass my test, I'm going to University of Michigan, hands down. I'm playing with, you know, the Fab Five. Those were my guys. Steve Fisher was down at my house literally every other day, just at my house, if I was playing basketball or not. That was my first choice. And then my second choice would have been close between Kansas and UCLA. And I was cheering people on a couple of shows that I did. I told them back in the day when we grew up, ESPN, they didn't show, you know, Midwest games. You wouldn't see the West Coast games, right? You wouldn't see the East Coast games. It was only certain matter. It was regional coverage. So if I went out to the West Coast, my parents probably wouldn't see me play as much unless we were playing like a big-time game, which was on CBS. So those factors played a role into my recruitment. A lot of West Coast teams wouldn't come get a kid from the Midwest based on budget, right? So now things has changed because of the shoe game where you got more resource to the institution and more money comes in from the NCAA. So the dynamics is just so much different. So I definitely would have went in a different direction based on just the fit for how I play. The one thing I did like about Michigan State's all their guards went pro from Steve Smith was a good friend of mine. And Judd Heitkamp had that same vision for me, and they had tied me the next great guard at MSU. So it kind of went back and forth, but they took me as a Prop 48, and that means that I couldn't play my first year, guys, at all. I felt like the NCAA just really stripped me away from having the opportunity to do something that I could do well, and also penalized me from one test score after I did 4 years of high school based on the score, from limiting me to you know, playing 1 year. If that don't happen to me, as I told you before, I probably come back when the first Big Ten championship under Tom Izzo, get MVP of the Big Ten. They already had me on the draft board as being a mid-round lottery pick.
Wow, wow, wow. So, Roland, I want to ask you this. How important – you talked about accountability as well, Roland. How important is it for you to be accountable for everything that you do if you really – trying to make a serious run at getting to that level where you want to be in your professional athletic career?
Well, really, honestly, at this point, being that I've done a lot of things and I've grown up and things like that, so really, if you're trying to make that run or not, it's still important for you to be accountable. You see what I'm saying? Because it's still going to take you down the wrong road, whether you're trying to be an athlete or not.
Absolutely. So, Angela, same question. How important is it for you to be accountable for your actions if you really want to make a serious run?
If you want to make a serious run, you better make up your mind what's important to you. I can tell you that. You better figure out what is the mark and be focused on it, because there are clearly unfair advantages that exist in the systems that's athletically. Even though the minority is the majority, there's still very little room for error. You better know what you're supposed to be doing as far as from a student student athlete perspective. You better go above and beyond the minimum. And you also better put in the extra time. And, you know, at the end of the day, that'll take you long beyond, you know, the average level, you know, of what everybody else is doing. That's the main thing, is to stay focused on the mark.
Okay, so what do you say to a kid? Angela, that is the kid like Roland, as he explained that, you know, that was put in the culture shock, that was put in, you know, a change of scenery, a change of atmosphere. What do you say to that kid?
Well, as far as an encouragement, you know, I think it's important to prep them. One of the things that we do with Tuak is we prep them with what the culture is, as Ray was referring to, help them to understand and to see virtual tours of the classrooms and to begin to stretch them in community service, because this is what you're gonna experience. This is what you should be prepared to expect. And even though it might stretch you, it's, you know, and have those discussions over and over again with different people, right? Surround them with a mentor, a buddy that's going to let them know, you know, this is what this experience is going to be like. I get it, and it's, you know, his story is it rings a bell, and it's also relevant with hundreds of student athletes across the board, and I get it. I had plenty of athletes just like myself. I transferred quickly. I had kids who didn't know what to do. And so, you know, they don't want to go home. You know, you got kids at prep schools that they don't want to go home, so they're sitting there, you know, they're starving. And so you have to really just explain and educate on the culture and the dynamics of what's really going on through sport.
Absolutely, absolutely. Coach Wilson, same question. How important is it? How important is that?
It's very important, and as Angela so eloquently said, you need to know, you need to put that work in. I tell my kids, know what your goal is, and then make your outline of what it is to achieve that goal. I remember Karl Malone used to say one of the motivating factors for him is that he used to think that every time he would take a break, somebody else was working. So that just made him go back to working. So as well as on the field, court, whatever your surface is that you play, but more importantly, in life and in the classroom, I tell my student athletes, you need to look at what you want to be, and you need to outline what it takes to get there. And you need to work. You need to put that work in. You need to do whatever you can. Which goes back to what we were saying earlier. Certain doors are open for you. You meet certain people. You build relationships. Whatever the case may be. But you got to impress with the up and coming youth. Now, it's not just about sports. A lot of people want to just focus on sports with a kid. But
that's
if
right.
A kid blows a knee out. If a kid blows a knee out, is that kid less valuable? Can that kid not contribute to society in a positive way just because they rolled their ankle, just because they lost the power in their arm to throw the football? Is that kid less important? So you got to enforce to the kid life. You got to force kid life. You got to focus on life, and you'll be successful everywhere else. Everything else falls in place, but you got to. It takes a village to raise a kid. Your community.
Let me throw this out there. Have we, or is the right term to say, sometimes do we sell a sense of false hope to our children coming up? I mean, and just pushing that everybody can be a professional? I mean, because if you really do the numbers, you know, everybody out of 300 kids, probably two or three of them is actually going to make it to that NBA or that NFL or that overseas or that Major League Baseball level. So sometimes do we sell a sense of false hope, if you will?
I think it was Ray that said earlier, if you don't make it as a pro, doesn't mean you're not successful. And that's what society as a whole tells the kids. If you don't make it as a pro, you're not successful.
Then you know,
and that's not necessarily, that's just not true.
That's right.
There's a lot of people that ran the football and got, go ahead.
Yeah, but going back to the question, we do that though. We do that as a people of color. We do that. We tell our kids, you're gonna get out here, you're gonna work out, and we're gonna do this, and you're gonna make it. You're gonna be pro. Ain't nobody gonna beat you. You get out there and you handle your business, and this is gonna be the end result. That's not true.
And I would like to chime in on that. I believe that's still the purity and the joy of the game from youth sports, right? When we talked about this monster was created through the shoe companies, right? And that magnifying glass grew from when you're talking about a kid being ranked now in the fifth, sixth grade, where you don't even understand, you know, chocolate milk from vanilla milk,
right? But
right?
You're trying to be number one.
But you got telling. So now you're putting unadded peer pressure on these kids to live up to something that you ain't even lived up to yourself in your own, you know, from your playing days, if you played or not. And it goes back to the motives of why your parents or why your guardians or why you're doing what you're doing. I think when you're at a young person, you still can't forget the love of the game or whatever sport you're playing, where you were just playing with your buddies at the parking lot or playing football, pick up tackle football, where it's still innocence there.
I think we encourage it, but the way that we convey, we have to change the message to what you're saying. We have
Absolutely.
To change that message because, see, this is something that was passed down to us. And I always take this back to the Ancient of Days, okay? We were entertainment, okay? As from our ancestors, we were mere entertainment, and that was sport before sport became sport. And so those mentalities of survival through sport have been passed down onto us. So, but if we begin to monopolize on the system that is monopolizing and capitalizing on us, then the tables will turn. We're in a time right now. It's a prime example where we have a voice in our black athletes. If we decide that we're going to not play, I guarantee you, because we're the majority, then I guarantee you that the tables will turn. We'll have a whole different attitude. If our top premier athletes at all sports, not just the NBA, the greatest brand, but if we begin to send a different message, all of our little boys and girls, they will have a whole different mindset. You can be a business owner. You can be a school owner. You can be a doctor. You can be a lawyer. You can be all those things and an athlete, right?
And I'm going to put candles on the cake
Absolutely.
On this, guys.
Absolutely.
When I played in Europe, it was so interesting to me because it seems like everything that we did as a people, minority, everybody followed suit.
Everybody.
You talk about from culture to everything on how the trend-setting things that we've done. And I said, listen, guys, we're more than just what you see from a microscope from Greece, Italy, and China, the countries I've been in, because when they look at the U.S., that's what they see, right? But they see our people. But what I try to tell them, we're so much more than what you see, but that's what's projected. Does that make sense?
But do we really believe it?
But do we believe it? And I like what my buddy Baron Davis said. They did a Zoom call, business call, and we have to realize that they said that we just want to get to the table like everybody's saying with this Black Lives Matter. But we realize that, listen, why we got to get to the table when we are the table?
We are the table.
Right.
We're asking us to invite ourselves to our own home. We want to have this conversation. We need to get to the table. Well, hold on, guys. We have to realize finally, I think we're waking up, we are the table. Like, let's have a real conversation, DT. If you want us on the call, like the coaches and everybody we got on here, like, I hope this blesses some people. Like, we got to realize we are the table. So now the tables have changed, but we have to understand, instead of having that slave mentality, we have to be on one accord, work together without saying I, me, and myself. Instead of saying us, we can make change. And this is not a black or white thing, but this is a real thing, right? Where we say, listen, we're not the tail, we are truly the head, but we have to change the mindset on not just sports, but this is also politics. This is being a real father, being a real mother, all the projections that they have portrayed us to be, that has to change. It ain't just with people that have the platform. It's just not people that have wealth. I'm talking about your average day high school coach, your everyday average guy that works as a teacher, at a charter or public school. Everybody has a voice in the
situation.
It
is your community. It is your community. It goes back to that old attitude. It takes a village to raise a child, but where was the village? The village has sprawled off because we have these problems of, I think someone said earlier, because the kids are not, the circumstances of the kids of being at home and stuff like that. I've seen it firsthand being in an urban school where the elder child has to be the parent until the parent comes home late at night. Because it touches on what Ray said, we have to teach ourselves to be a better father, to be a better mother. But you're doing in single mother homes where mom's got to be out late working till 12 and 1 o'clock in the morning. So the elder child has to be mama and make sure that the siblings are doing their work, make sure the siblings are ready for school the next day, make sure the siblings eat. And so they can't turn that mindset off of I got to be an adult, but now I'm going to an environment where there are people that can help me, but I don't know how to allow them to help me because I have to be that rock for my siblings. And so when we learn how to cut that and help that off and learn how to let the community back in and help raise and help teach each other and learn from each other, that's when you'll start seeing the change. That's when you'll start. You go back to that, it takes a community, and you let the community be the community, then you'll see the change. But until then, you won't see any change because it's too much, like you said, I and not we. It's too many me and not us. And if you change your mentality, you're not going to get it.
Because what you said is so powerful, because that person that you're talking about was myself and my wife, right? So what I'm telling athletes, instead of just talking about it, are you putting your money up and causing economic development, right? Are you pointing back where, okay, if you know that it's parents and some single mothers and some single dads that's trying their best, well, let's build some daycares and some child cares and job opportunities
community centers
and some services where those people don't have to put on those, the parent don't have to have that burden, or the elder child or the middle-aged child, where they can still be a child, right? Right?
Right.
So those things are very,
absolutely,
very important.
Absolutely.
So these are real transparent conversations. So sometimes, as we all know, as you know from coaching, sometimes we're that guardian, we're that father figure or that uncle, that mentor, right? That's providing their share things with their coach more than they were their own parents, right? Because pride
is
the way.
I can't agree with you more. I cannot agree with you more.
Just let me
go ahead, DJ.
My producers are telling me we are out of time for tonight. We may have to come back with a part two of this subject because this is a very, very powerful subject.
We should, DT, because we're just touching the tip of the iceberg on this type of subject. This subject is bigger than just. This subject is actually you can make your own last dance, DT dance or whatever you want to name it, out of this topic alone because there's just so much we have.
Go ahead, coach.
No, there's just so much. There's so much that you can do, and so much you can only say. But as we're living in this society right now, what we're saying, it's time out for talking. It's like Ray said. Are you actually, as a coach or as a person in the community, are you reaching out and trying to help someone when you see them, or are you just saying, "Oh, I wish we could do something"? Are you actually formulating a plan to let's see if we can open up a community center?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
It's just like we have a group here in Pontiac, and I don't know everything, but we have a group here in Pontiac, and I was personally involved with it. We came up with an idea to take one of our school buildings, write a grant, and try to make a Pontiac community center where we could use night classes.
That's it.
We could have a daycare, and we could have our summer program, our summer basketball and all our summer programs that we used to have, free lunch and things of that nature. and we got shot down by the city council, but we formulated a plan. Are you doing? Are you making those actions, or are you just talking? Because talk is going out the window. Talk was the generation before. This generation loves, sees action, and they follow action. And that's the only thing that's going to get their attention. So, again, you can make a series out of this, DT, because this is longer than an hour show or an hour and a half show or whatever the case may be.
All right. Angela, talk to me. Final word.
I'm sorry. Say again.
I said
well,
final
I say
word.
This. I look forward to it. Okay, I look forward to a series like you're saying, Coach. I think discussing a strategy of reunification, sharing our network and resources together is what's going to be next steps. And I know for our household, we're about action. We're about serving others that are in need, and I'm pretty sure that everyone on this call has something that each other needs to be able to meet the needs of our youth and our adult learners in the community at this time. So when the Black Lives Matter funding comes about, that we get that urban area development funding.
Absolutely. Ray, talk to me. Final word.
Man, I think it's a holistic approach that we have to take. We have to put pride and egos out the door and really have a servant leadership without a motive and wanting to return. And we can say we're here to serve and not want to return. We see true change.
Awesome, awesome. Hey, I thank everyone that was on the show tonight. I want to send special thanks to my main man, my mentor, Mr. Ray Weathers. God bless you, man. His lovely wife, Miss Angela Weathers. My local coach, Coach David Wilson. You know I love you, brother. Pioneer activist, Big Lou, he was on the line earlier. My main man, my producer, Mr. Roland Tennyson, all the way from Dallas, Texas. He's the man behind the scenes. Hey, stay tuned next week. We're coming right back with part two. Athletes that could have made it but didn't make it, why not? Stay tuned next week on IFL Radio Nation with Sports Talk with DT. You all have a great night.
Night.